Would you bow with me for prayer, please? Father, I thank you for that promise that David just sang about, that no matter what we're going through in this life, when we're faced with adversity, when we have these uncertain times, as we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks, we can have confidence knowing that that you're right here with us, that you don't leave us, you never forsake us. And we just thank you for that. I thank you for that message that David brought to us and the reminder. And we just praise you for being a God who is involved in every single aspect of our lives. And God, I just pray that you'd be involved now as we discuss your word, as I preach, as others listen. I pray, God, that your word would come alive and just touch the hearts of people here today. It's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. I want to start with a question as we continue our series this morning. Why is it that some people make it and other people don't make it? You know what I'm talking about? Like, you've got two athletes who have equal ability. Maybe both of them accept a scholarship to play at a local college or whatever. One goes on to have a great career while the other flounders and maybe even eventually drops out of school. Why is that? Why is it that you might see two equally talented entrepreneurs, equal assets, equal opportunities, both develop businesses, one of them thrives and does quite well, and the other one goes bankrupt? Why is that? Is it just dumb luck, or is there something else? We've seen couples, maybe two couples begin with similar cultural and spiritual backgrounds 30 years later. One of those couples is still happily married, while somewhere along the way, something happened in the other couple's relationship and they didn't make it. They wound up divorced. You know, there's a lot of contributing factors to why people make it and why some people don't in a lot of different areas of life. But I think one of the most important elements that we can develop is persistence. You know, the people who really achieve, the people who really are successful, they stay with it longer. They don't give up when adversity strikes. They don't quit easily. They're not intimidated by obstacles in their lives. In fact, they see those obstacles as opportunities for growth. Over the course of time, they gain confidence and they bounce back from their failures, and they make those difficult times in their lives, they see them as less fearful. They see them as less stressful. They see them as opportunities for God to work. There's an author by the name of Paul Stoltz who wrote a book called The Adversity Quotient, Turning Obstacles into Opportunities, and it's had a significant impact in the business world, educational circles as well. And Stoltz points out that for years, the predominant measure of potential in a person was their IQ. In other words, how intelligent were they, their intelligence quotient. But there are all kinds of people in our world who have amazing IQs, IQs that are off the charts. People like Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, who had a ridiculous IQ, who basically turn out to be failures in life. There's something more important than just having smarts. There's something more important than having an IQ. And Stoltz says that's an AQ. That is an adversity quotient. In other words, how do you handle problems when they come up in your life? Do you keep going, or do you let those problems cover you up and you just quit? And the people who refuse to quit, the people who persevere, they are people who have a high AQ, and they are the ones who seem to be more successful at things in life. And according to Paul Stoltz, while you can't do much to improve your IQ, you've either got a good IQ or you don't. You can dramatically improve your AQ. You can enhance your ability to conquer adversity in your life. That's great. I love what Stoltz said there. I like what a guy named Paul said a lot better, though. And even though I agree with Stoltz, I like what Paul wrote about in regards to this, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 through 18. In this section, Paul discusses the importance of perseverance in the Christian life, the importance of pressing on, the importance of continuing to go on, even though it's very, very difficult, even though people around you may say, just throw in the towel, just give up. And verse 16 in this section is our theme for today, and I love this. It says, therefore, we don't lose heart. I love that. Therefore, we don't lose heart. I look around and I see a lot of people, Christians, maybe even people within this church, maybe people in this room today who have lost heart. People who want to give up. And I want to go out on a limb and say that I'm probably talking to someone in this room, or maybe I will in the second service. I'm going to say there's a good chance that there are some people who are struggling in this area of their life. Losing heart. Ready to give up. The world's just been kind of beating up on you. Maybe it's finances, maybe it's health, maybe it's relationships. I don't know. But even if that's not you, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you probably know some people who are there. Even if it's not you, you probably work with, or maybe you live with people who are in this particular circumstance. So I want you to pay careful attention to what we're talking about today, because we're going to go verse by verse through these verses today and see some familiar encouragement that Paul gives to us that can enhance our endurance, that can help us to have confidence in uncertain times. Here's the first thing that I want you to understand this morning. Get back up when you get knocked down. Get back up. Verses 8 and 9, we're hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. The Living Bible in verse 9 paraphrases that we get knocked down, but we get up again and we get going. You know, the Apostle Paul, he had this amazing resilience. Can you imagine what the story would have been like had Paul just given up whenever he got knocked down? You know, if he had just said, you know what, when I was in Jerusalem and I was threatened in Jerusalem and I had to flee to an Arabian desert, what if I had just stayed out there and quit instead of going and studying and preparing to come back into town and minister to people? Can you imagine if he just stayed out there and said, I quit? No, but he resurfaces in Antioch and he's ready to do ministry, all right? He goes to Lystra, and they stone him, and he gets back up, and he goes into Derbe, and he continues to preach the gospel, and he reaches a number of people for Christ and makes them disciples. He's thrown into a prison in Philippi. And what does he do there? Does he quit? No. He converts the Philippian jailer. They drag him into a courtroom in Caesarea. Does he throw up his hands and quit? No. He turns the witness stand into a pulpit and starts preaching for Jesus. Shipwreck him. Okay, that's it. I'm done. Come on. I've been through enough. I quit. No. He doesn't even quit then, even though he's shipwrecked. He's on the island of Malta and he wins the island's chief politician to the Lord. They throw him into a Roman jail, and he emerges from that Roman jail months later with much of what we know as the New Testament in his hand. You see, he didn't quit. He kept going. Even though he was knocked down, even though he was crushed, even though he was nearly destroyed, he continued to go. And I think that's his encouragement to us today. Don't give up. You're going to have some problems in this world. Jesus told you that. Shouldn't be a surprise. Continue going. And we can look down through all of history. We see people like the Apostle Paul who had difficulties in their lives and they continued to go on. And we see what happened to Abraham Lincoln. Man, you read his story. His life was full of problems. Thomas Edison, he was ridiculous on the adversity quotient. He was rejected so many times and he just kept pushing, pushing, pushing. And what they did was, someone put it this way, those types of people rejected rejection. You know? They were rejected and they refused to give up. Teddy Roosevelt. You know, how many of you are history buffs? Yeah, you know about Teddy and his Rough Riders. You know, you love that story. He was rejected. He tried to join the army. He said, no, you're not going to do it. You know, the Spanish-American War broke out, and they said, you can't be in the army, so what did he do? You know, they told him he was too old, they told him he was too nearsighted, but he rejected the rejection, and he went out and he organized a civilian militia, and then he started his, what we know as the Rough Riders, and then he went to Cuba, and he led his followers up the famous Battle of San Juan Hill, and the rest of Teddy Roosevelt's story is history, because he refused to give up. Charles Goodyear, right? We know Goodyear tires. We know all of that. He was penniless in 1838 when he discovered his method for vulcanizing rubber. At that time, the invention still needed to be perfected. Creditors were hounding him. He filed bankruptcy, but he was thrown in jail for contempt of court. But while he was in jail, you know what he did? He continued to think about, he continued to work on this process of vulcanizing rubber behind bars. Not only when he came out was he able to pay off his creditors, but he made a fortune for everybody who believed in him. He didn't give up. Albert Einstein was a graduate student. And in his doctoral dissertation, he was rejected by the University of Bern. And he said, this is too fanciful. This is too irrelevant. Fortunately, Einstein rejected the rejection, and he didn't throw his theory of relativity into the wastebasket. Michael Jordan got cut from his high school basketball team his freshman year. Think about that for just a moment. Colonel Sanders was broke at the age of 65. Before he marketed his Kentucky Fried Chicken recipe. Bud Paxson failed at two marriages, went bankrupt twice before founding the Home Shopping Network, and he's doing okay for himself now. And I think it's imperative for us as Christians. I'm not saying, I won't stand up here and sound all Joel Osteen on you this morning and say, oh, just be happy and everything's going to be fine. If you're a Joel Osteen fan, I'm sorry. Praying for you. But I think we can learn some lessons from the world and some of these people in how when we get knocked down, we can't just cave. I think Christians cave way too easily. I think it's imperative that Christians have the same spirit of persistence that some of these people we read about in history do. Proverbs 24:16, for though a righteous man falls seven times, he rises again, but the wicked are brought down by calamity. And as it becomes increasingly unpopular for us to be evangelical, we're going to get knocked down more and more and more as we go along in this world. And we're going to have this resiliency. We're going to have to be able to stand up again after we've been knocked down time and time and time again. It's important for us. It's essential for us. And there might be some of you who are sitting out there this morning, you have stumbled. Maybe you've stumbled in your Christian walk. I urge you, get back up. Maybe you've fallen into some bad habits. Maybe some of you, your marriages haven't worked out. Maybe as parents, you haven't done what you were supposed to do. Maybe some of you have done some wrong things in the church. And you're sitting out there even today tempted to throw in the towel. Maybe you're tempted to just kind of wallow in self-pity and quit. Get back up. Keep fighting. It's amazing what God will have in store for you if you don't give up. Be inspired by Christian people who have had adversity in their lives and they have not thrown in the towel and they have continued to work. Be inspired by people like Johnny Erickson Tata. Do you know her story? She was in a swimming accident and she dove in and she broke her neck, her spinal cord. She's paralyzed from the neck down, has been that way her entire life, but she writes songs, she sings, she writes books, she paints. You know, and she inspires people all over the world because of her faith in Jesus. Dave Ramsey. How many of you listen to Dave Ramsey? Yeah, you buy his books possibly, watch him on television. And one of the best-known financial Christian counselors out there, he was bankrupt midway through his life, and now he leads financial seminars all over the world because he took those failures, those opportunities, and put them to good use. Sherry Rose Shepherd, she entered a beauty pageant. In the beauty pageant, it was the Miss USA pageant. During the pageant, she walked off the end of the runway where the judges were sitting. She fell off of the runway onto the table in front of the judges, face down. She told herself in her mind, a million things are going on. She said, I got to get up. So she brushed herself up and she quipped at the judges. She said, I just wanted to give you something to remember me by. And they remembered her and she won. Can you imagine that? I've told this story before. Francie Schwartz, in the book Chicken Soup for the Soul at Work, tells about a guy named Jerry. Jerry was always in a good mood. If you'd ask Jerry how he was doing, he would say, if I was any better, I'd be twins, you know? Schwartz wrote this. He said, one day I said to Jerry, he said, I don't get it. You can't possibly be that positive all of the time. You can't possibly be that upbeat of a person all the time. And Jerry replied, each morning I wake up and I say to myself, Jerry, you have two choices today. You can choose to be in a good mood or you can choose to be in a bad mood. And he says, every day I wake up and I say, I choose to be in a good mood. And Schwartz said, it's not that easy. And he said, yes, it is. Jerry said, life is all about choices. When you cut out all of the junk, all the rest of the stuff that's out there, every situation that you're in is a choice. He said, several years ago, Jerry's restaurant that he owned was robbed, and the thieves panicked, and they shot him. And Jerry recalled that day in the story. He says, when I was lying on the floor, I remembered I had two choices. I could choose to live or I could choose to die. He said, I chose to live. He said, the paramedics were great. They kept saying I was going to be fine. But when they wheeled me into the emergency room, he said, I saw the expressions on the faces of the doctors and the nurses. He said, I got really scared. In their eyes, I could read, here's a dead man. He said, I knew I needed to take action. So there was a big burly nurse that came out shouting questions at me, and she asked, are you allergic to anything? He said, yes, I am. And the doctors stopped working, the nurses stopped working, and they all gathered around to see what he was allergic to. And Jerry said, bullets. He said, over their laughter, I told them, I'm choosing to live. Operate on me now as if I'm going to live, not as if I'm going to die. After 18 hours of surgery, weeks in intensive care, Jerry lived, thanks to the grace of God and the skill of the doctors and nurses. Schwartz said that I saw Jerry 6 months after the accident. I said, how you doing? He said, if I was any better, I'd be twins. Struck down, not destroyed. You know, we use this word, but, a lot. You know, and most of the time when we use the word but, we use it in the negative, you know. Oh, it's a really nice day, but it might rain a little bit later on, you know. I like the church service today, but the music was too loud, you know. I believe in God, but I don't understand how he could allow something like this to happen. But the New Testament doesn't use that word but in the negative. If you ever notice that, most every time it's used in the positive. You know? The church was persecuted, but those who were scattered abroad, they preached the word. You know? James was beheaded, but the word of God increased. You see, here's these negative things that happened, and then a positive came out of it. Peter was in prison, but the church earnestly prayed for him and he was released. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. 2 Corinthians 4:8 and 9. We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. Therefore, we don't lose heart. Now, here's the second thing that we need to understand. We need to love the Lord more than we love life itself. No? We need to love the Lord more than we love life itself. Because I'm going to be honest, there's a lot of times we are not very good at that. Are we? 2 Corinthians 4:10 reads, we always carry around in our body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. Now, those physical sufferings that we have in our lives, they remind us of what Jesus went through on our behalf. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may be revealed in our mortal body. So then, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. The Apostle Paul considered himself expendable. He got to the point in his life, in his walk with the Lord, where he said, I don't really care if I live or die. If I die telling other people about Jesus Christ, what a better way to go. Huh? And we see examples of that all throughout Scripture. Acts 19 talks about Paul. He's preaching such a revival in Ephesus that those who manufactured and they sold souvenirs for the goddess to represent the goddess Diana, they felt threatened. They thought, if Christianity breaks out through here and our business is going to go down. People aren't going to buy these little trinkets anymore. You know, they're not going to buy these Diana bumper stickers to put on their chariots and things like. Okay, they didn't have those. All right, I'm just seeing if you're with me still here this morning. They stirred up such a riot among the Christians or against the Christians. And it says this, the people rushed as one man into the theater. Okay? That's Acts chapter 19, verse 30. It says, Paul wanted to appear before the crowd, but the disciples would not let him. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. It says they rushed, the crowd rushed as one man into the theater. And when I think about the rushing into one man as into a theater, when I think theater, I think Showplace 12 up the road here, you know? And I'm thinking, why are all of these people wanting to rush into this theater? But then when you look at it, if you study, I got a picture up here I want to show you of a theater in Ephesus. This is the theater we're talking about here. And the crowd rushed into, this could hold up to 25,000 people. And these 25,000 people, they were against Christians. And you know what Paul said when he saw this theater full of people who wanted to kill Christians? He said, I want to go there. I want to go there because I want to preach the gospel. What a great opportunity. You know, here's all of these people shouting, great is Artemis of the Ephesians. Great is Artemis of the Ephesians. That's what they kept chanting. But Paul wanted to go into the midst of that hostile environment and preach Jesus. Picture that for just a moment. Can you imagine? Acts 19:31, even some of the officials of the province, friends of Paul, sent him a message begging him not to venture into that theater. Paul was willing to face that hostile crowd because he loved the Lord more than life itself. If he could just convince one more person that Jesus was indeed the Messiah, it would be worth whatever the cost. Shipwreck, beatings, he was willing to go through all the imprisonment, even death. That's why he persevered. That's why he never quit. Let me ask you a question this morning. Does Jesus matter to you more than life itself? See, that's a reality check, isn't it? I think that's a fair question for us to ask each other. Does Jesus matter to you more than life itself? I was thinking about this idea throughout the week, and then I'm flipping through the stations, and I'm watching a television show the other night, and it was the movie First Night. Has anybody seen the movie First Night? Sean Connery, Richard Gere, pretty good movie. I like it. Retelling of the Legend of Camelot. I like that kind of stuff. And I want you to watch this clip for just a moment that I pulled out of this movie I want to share with you.
Mark, are
you? That's my name.
I'm Lancelot. You ready?
Ready.
Well, you don't have to kill me to win, you know. That tight hold of your sword?
You worry about that!
Good. Now, can I give you some advice?
What's that?
Don't drop your sword.
Oh!
this your sword? Well done.
Give him a hand!
Well done, Mark.
How did you do that? How did he do that?
Was that a trick? No. No trick. It's a way of fight.
Could I do it?
Tell me. I can learn.
You have to study your opponent, how he moves, so you know what he's going to do before he does it.
I can do that.
Yeah. You have to know that one moment in every fight, when you win or lose, and you have to know how to wait for it.
I can do that.
And you have to not care whether you live or die.
Catch that? You have to not care whether you live or die. I don't know what this world's going to come to. I don't know what this nation's going to... Well, it's going to come to an end, I know that. But I don't know what's going to happen exactly before all of that happens. And do you have that kind of an attitude as a Christian? You don't really care. Your life isn't about you. You have to get to the point where you say, I don't... And not that you want to throw yourself down as a martyr, not that you want to die, but if it comes right down to it, do you value your relationship with Jesus Christ more than life itself? That's what Jesus is asking of us. Listen to Matthew 16, 24, 25. If anyone come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, follow me. Whoever wants to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for me, that's who will find it. Do you love the Lord so much that you would be willing to give your life to advance His cause? Let's say hypothetically we get a call tomorrow and we learn that the graffiti that was painted on our building really was terrorists. And it came out that they have targeted our church because we're Christians. Will you be here next week? Would you say, I'm willing to die so that Christ might live? Now, most of us, we're not called upon to be martyrs. But here's the relative question. Is your devotion to Christ greater than any other single devotion to anything else in this life? Do you love the Lord more than relationships? Do you love the Lord more than comforts that you have at home? And if He asked you to give that up and move to another country and serve Him, would you do it? Do you love the Lord more than the pleasures of this life? Do you put worship and His church ahead of other things such as ball games and picnics and golf matches and days on the lake? No. If you're going to persevere in the Christian life, your allegiance to Christ has to supersede everything else. Verses 13 through 15 reveal an additional encouragement to persistence. Believe what you say you believe. It's written, I believe, therefore I have spoken. That's what he said. If you really believe in something, if you believe in your football team, if you believe in your grandkids, you're going to talk about them. You're going to bear witness about them. You're going to give your testimony because real belief cannot keep silent. If you really believe what you say you believe, how can you keep your mouth shut? Oh, I'm guilty of talking about my kids a lot. Some of you, you know, if you're sick of it, I'm sorry, I apologize. But I'm proud of my kids, you know, because I believe in them. I talk about Jesus a lot because I believe in Him. You know, the things that we talk about a lot, that's what we believe in. Do you believe in the atoning death of Jesus Christ? Then talk about it. Paul did. Toward the end of his life, he says this, 2 Timothy 1:12, I'm not ashamed because I know whom I believed and convinced that he's able to guard what I have entrusted to him for that day. Paul believed that there was an eternal purpose. What do you believe? It was that belief in Jesus Christ that kept Paul going, and that's what'll keep you going today. You know? Maybe a school teacher will say, my patience is gone, but I believe God has called me to teach people, and I have to keep going. Or maybe it's a Sunday school teacher. Oh, man, those twos and threes. Maybe you've been there. But they got to be taught. And I believe so much that I just have to keep doing it. A wife may say, you know what? My husband doesn't show me any attention. He neglects me. He's indifferent all the time. But you know what? I'm taking my vow seriously. I believe what I said. I'm going to stick with it, and I'm going to do the right thing. A businessman might get discouraged because his competitors lie and they cheat and they're making money hand over fist, and he might be tempted to give up on his principles. But then he remembers, no, that's not what I believe. And so he sticks to his guns and does what he's supposed to do. Do you believe what you say you believe? I want to close with this. Man, I've been preaching a long time. Didn't plan to go this long. I've probably only got 25 minutes left. So, I just want to close with a story. I remember receiving a phone call. It was on Garrett's birthday that my dad wasn't doing very well and that he probably was not going to make it through the night and that we should get home. And, that call made me feel pretty lousy, but I remembered something that happened my freshman year of Bible college that made me say, well, I guess it's now time for me to believe what I say I believe. And here's that story. As a freshman at CCU, Jill Rendell, who was on the women's basketball team, she was killed when her van that she was riding in with the women's basketball team rolled over on a snowy road in Michigan on a road trip playing basketball. This just weeks after she was named homecoming queen at CCU. A few months later, I heard her father give a testimony at the Bible college, and he told us this. He said, I've been preaching it all my life. Now it's time for me to practice it. Do I believe what I say I believe? It's one thing to say you believe when life is going smoothly, but then when your parents pass away at a not very old age, my dad's 70, my mom's 69, Stacy's dad 58. Can you imagine losing a 19-year-old daughter who would still come home and jump up on his lap on the weekends? And Wally persevered, and he said this, the queen has gone to be with the king. Do you believe what you say you believe? I hope you don't ever have to go through anything like that, but in this world you will have trouble. And that's when you better know what you believe. Because Satan's going to attack you hard. Here's what Job said, even though he may slay me, still, I will trust in him. Who do you trust in this morning? Do you believe what you say you believe? If you don't, if you've got some doubts, now's the time to get those things worked out. We're going to offer a song of decision, and maybe it's something that you just need to talk with God about where you're seated. Maybe it's something you want us to pray with you about. Maybe there are some of you who are here today who's never made that decision to say, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. You've never repented of your sins. You've never been baptized into Him. Now's your chance to express that faith in Him. I'm going to ask you to stand. And we're going to go to the Lord in prayer, and if you have a need, then won't you come?